In 1971, Yoko Ono announced a one-woman show at the Museum of Modern Art, but in reality, none of her work was actually on view at the museum. Yoko has always been ahead of her time, but now, 44 years later, the museum has finally caught up with her. And Yoko Ono, One Woman Show, 1960 to 1971, is opening at MoMA this coming Sunday. It includes work from the decade that led up to that unofficial conceptual show, including paintings, sculpture, film, performance, audio recordings, works on paper, and archival materials. And I'm delighted this brought Yoko Ono back to our show.
Welcome back. Thank you, Leonard.
John Lennon once said that you were the world's most famous unknown artist. Everyone knows her name, but no one knows what she actually does. Does this show give people a chance to see your artwork in a clear way, or at least the artwork you were doing then?
Yes, in a way, it does. Well, it does. And I'm very, very honored and thankful that they're doing this. Grateful because, they're taking a chance, you know. But museums of that caliber, Museum Modern Art is naturally the New York Museum Modern Art is known through the world, and they become daring. They're daring with a price in a way, you know.
Well, Glenn Lowry, MoMA's director, has said that this is the show you could have had in 1971 if the museum had been prescient enough to do it then. Do you think this is a show you would have wanted to have created at that time?
No, I didn't want to create it there because, I mean, not officially. I just thought that I should do it. So I did it.
In 1971.
Yeah.
And your announcement put an F in front of the word art in the museum's name. Should I assume that the museum has forgiven you for that irreverent pun?
Well, you know, most artists, or maybe not most artists, but some artists are kind of rebellious, and I was one of them. And so I didn't really think Museum Modern Art Institution too heavily. I mean, I thought, okay, well, it's an institution. So I was just having fun with it, you know, by calling it Museum of...
You can say that word.
No, I won't. I was carrying a bag that had a big F on it. Mm. And, you know, before the art, it said Museum of Modern Art. There was a little sort of bump there. So I was walking underneath that bump, putting F there, adding F, actually.
You took out ads in the New York Times, the Village Voice, and even printed an exhibition catalog. Did people go to the museum expecting to see a show?
I think so. Already by then, I had some fans, followers, and they all went there. And so too many people went there to the point that, you know, where the ticket sells there, it says, this is not here. It said, this is not here, Yoko Ono's show. And that's very interesting because I had the show at the time in Ebbesen Museum called This Is Not Here. So he just, you know, ripped it off and put it there, you know.
You had a man stationed at the museum entrance with a sandwich board stating that you had unleashed a swarm of flies in the museum and invited visitors to follow them around.
Well, what happened was actually, so I have to tell you, so, you know, if you went in there at the Museum of Modern Art that day, you wouldn't have seen anything because my idea was a conceptual show. At the time, there was not even a name conceptual show. And conceptual art was not there yet. You know, that particular expression was not there yet.
Although there were a couple of gallery owners like Seth Siegelaub and the one that you showed with George Mashonis, who were already showing artists who were doing something that came to be known as.
It was very interesting. But I just felt that I wanted to do the show. And I had some cameramen and audio men standing there waiting for people to come out of the museum and say, and so did you see Yoko on a show? How did you like it? And some people say, oh, that was great. And some people said, well, I couldn't find it. And it was really fun.
Now, it's interesting that in Japan, Marcel Duchamp's ideas had a strong influence on modern art, both before and after World War II. But did you even, were you even aware of Duchamp before you came to the United States?
About what?
About, well, because so much of conceptual art comes out of what he initiated, you know, during the 20s and 30s.
Well, you see, in Asia, especially in Japan, things were happening, and avant-garde art was very, very active in a way.
There was an artist, Tomoyoshi Murayama, who had a group called the Mavo Group that was inspired by Duchamp.
Well, actually, they all want to say that, you know, they did it then, they did it then, but sometimes it wasn't. It doesn't matter. I just did not know any of that. And when I came back, when I came to New York, you know, I thought I just do things that I wanted to do. And one of the things were this particular thing.
Now, your parents weren't artists.
Pardon?
Were your parents artists? Your parents, were they interested in the arts?
Yeah, of course.
When did they come to live here?
Well, I don't know, really. What are you trying to say?
I'm asking when you came to the United States with your family.
Oh, you mean, yes, I came from with the family, yeah.
Yeah. How old were you?
I was 18. No, I wasn't 18. Was I 18? I think around 18, 19, yeah.
You studied at Sarah Lawrence?
Yeah.
Were you an art major?
No, I was, well, there was no major or minor in Sarah Lawrence at the time. There was a three major thing that you can choose. And I chose a composition, a music composition, and a poetry, and a social science.
And to some degree, that's all reflected in the work that you made.
I think so, yeah, in a way, yeah.
What was the art scene like for you at that time? Abstract expressionism was still riding high and minimalism had come in, but you seem to have become friends with John Cage, Jasper Johns, Robert Rauschenberg, some of the new people.
Yeah, I just bumped into John Cage. It was very good. Stefan Volpe, who's an atonal composer, and he was the only one in New York, at least, who was representing atonal composition. And he introduced me to John Cage. Mm-hmm. And it was in a very strange way. I mean, they were having a Carnegie Recital Hall concert. And afterwards, we had this habit of old musicians went to Russian Tea Room. At the time, it was very, very kind of popular amongst the musicians.
Well, just down the street from Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, exactly. And I went there with Stefan Volpe and other people. And Stefan said, well, look, I want to introduce you to John Cage. He says, oh, why? You know, I was sort of shy about being introduced to anybody. He said, no, it's better that you should meet him. He's a very interesting person. So we went to where Cage was having tea or coffee with David Tudor, and I was introduced. And then immediately Cage said, well, you know, Reverend Suzuki, actually, who's sort of like presenting Zen Buddhism. And he was going to have a lecture at Columbia University in about 2 weeks or something. I think you should come see. It's very interesting. So maybe. And I did go. And Cage was there and said he was very happy that I came and everything. And I think that Suzuki Hoshi, we call him Suzuki Hoshi, did a very interesting lecture. But, of course, you know, Zen Buddhism is something that I knew already, of course.
But for Americans, that was almost a craze at that time.
Yeah, there was a craze. And I knew that he did a lecture in Sarah Lawrence, too.
Well, you got a studio on Chamber Street in 1960, and there was an art scene down there at the time. Were you doing painting there, or were you doing events already?
I just don't want you to, I mean, you don't have to talk about it, but when you talk about it, I like it to be exact. What happened was, no, nothing was going on there.
Well, I remember Lamont Young was down.
Lamont Young was not doing it yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Yes. Okay. So the thing is that Lamont Young came from the West Coast, and just West Coast. He came just around that time, and he became. Oh, well, he was a friend of Richard Maxfield, if you remember. He was a highly thought of avant-garde composer, doing electronic music kind of thing, and. I was with a partner, Toshi Janagi, and we were just walking around Broadway, actually, 96th Street, around there. And I just got this idea, look, we know all these people who are incredible composers, but this city only has Carnegie Hall, Carnegie Recital Hall, and Town Hall for composers to express their music. And it's not there because, you know, to get there, you have to really be a very well-known, accomplished composer. So, you know, people like us, avant-garde artists, avant-garde composers, don't have a chance, you know. And I already knew all these people, so why don't I create a place where people can actually express their composition? And I said, look, you see that kind of, on the second floor around that place, around that point of Broadway, I saw people, the ballet dancer, all exercising on the second floor. I said, we can just borrow, rent a place like that and do it. It's very simple. Why don't we just go up there and ask about the rent, which is crazy. And Toshi said, okay, well, you know. So he went along with me, and both of us went upstairs. And I said, well, is this place for rent? And they were very polite and very nice people. So I said, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, this is an exercise place. Said, oh, okay. And so I said, well, we just have to get something like this, you know. And Minoru Niizuma, who was then a very well-known sculptor, and a friend said, Yoko, if you're looking for a place, you know, there's some places in downtown, and they're called lofts. Now, we didn't even have that expression, lofts. Oh, really? And, you know, some artists are now starting to rent lofts as a studio and making their work. I said, oh, that's interesting. So he took me there one weekend, and said, see, that one is empty, and this one's already taken, but, you know, it's that kind of thing. I said, all right. So we went to this place, and it was so funny because the owner of the loft said, Katsura Yukiko, who's a very famous, at the time, a very famous Japanese artist. Katsura Yukiko came, and she's interested in the place. And if she's not taking it, I'll give it to you. I said, oh my God, that's great. And it was $50.50 a month. That's very, very, it was a kind of money that, you know, it's very hard for me to produce. But then I thought, well, I could do that much. And so about before that weekend, I was just feeling so, so bad that, oh, I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to get it. And I was rolling in pain about it. And then when the morning came, I grabbed $50 and just ran to the Lower East Side. East Side? North Side? West Side? Lower Manhattan.
Chambers Street is kind of...
So what happened? What happened? He said, oh, Yukiko Katsura did not take it. All right, so here's... And that's how I got it. And I put... it was a cold water flat and didn't even have electricity. And I just put the electricity... Some artists told me that you can do that. And got the electricity from the hall. And then somebody gave me a very, very good heater. And that was it. And I got a piano, an old piano. And that's how I started. But then I didn't, even before I started, Richard Maxfield called me and said, did you know that Lamont is interested in it too? And he would join you. I said, of course, that's great. Because Lamont had a lot of connections, you know, from the West Side, like L.A. and San Francisco. And so that, you know, we would have some interesting artists as well.
So you did performances. And is it true that Marcel Duchamp, Peggy Guggenheim, also Noguchi, Jasper Johns, Robert Rauschenberg, all came to them?
Yes, yeah, but that's because the first night was right after very heavy snow in 1960. I think it was end of 1960. And so I thought, well, no, nobody's going to come. But very, very interestingly, it was kind. John Cage made sure to bring Sari Deans, Peggy Guggenheim, David Tudor, MC Richards too, probably. They all came down from Stony Point.
You had an all-star audience for this $50.50 flat.
Well, I know.
Yeah, don't you wish you'd get a loft today for $50.50?
I didn't even have to promote it or advertise it. And they came, and that became a kind of a word around the art circle.
We have to take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk about the work that's in the exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art now. That's opening on Sunday. My guest is Yoko Ono. The show is called Yoko Ono, One Woman Show, 1960-1971. Stay with us. And we're listening right now to audio from her film Fly, which we will be talking about later. Yoko Ono and her song Open Your Box. She is now the recipient of a major show, Yoko Ono One Woman Show, 1960-1971. It's on view at the Museum of Modern Art until September 7th. Do you think that having a show like this has now made you part of the art establishment?
Yeah, well, you know, it probably will give some give some idea about my work to some people. Yeah,
George Machunas had had a gallery on Madison Avenue. Was he the first one to show your work?
Yes, he was, and I was surprised because by then the Chamber Street concerts were getting very, very popular, and you know when I do a show there, Lamont and I did the show. Maybe 100 or 200 people used to come. And one day they told me that the guy who was there last time got an idea about this kind of thing. And he got a place on Madison Avenue in the Midtown. And he's opening a gallery. And he got all these artists of my group go there to do a show, to offer them shows. And they're all queuing up. And so your place is finito. So I said, oh, really? But then the thing is, I was not so upset about that because by then there was so much jealousy about what I was doing. So that I got so many attacks from people. So I thought, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe it's good that it's over. But then George McCunis, who got the idea from my shows and doing this thing, called me and said, I want to do your show. And the in a Madison Avenue, uptown, meaning not uptown, is it?
But that's where all the art galleries were, on Madison Avenue at that time.
And I never had a show before in a public place. You know, I was just showing it in my loft. So, this is great. So I did go there.
And what did you show?
Well, the show was, Now You Will See It in Museum of Modern Art. They're starting already from the Chamber Street and AG Gallery, which was George McCunis' gallery. All that stuff is there in Museum of Modern Art now.
There were paintings that were all made from the same roll of canvas.
I know.
Why was that important?
Well, you see, George said, well, I'm going to show you work, so you better have it ready. So I said, oh, okay. And I just went to the military surplus shop, you know, the sort of, and they had a roll of canvas, just one roll of canvas, very old, kind of wrinkled stuff. And I said, oh, well, I want this. And I think they gave me it for 58 or 68 cents. I don't remember that. I thought, oh, great. And I went home with it, and I started cut up, like, one, I cut up to do a shadow painting. The next one, this, and, you know, just went all like that. And then in the end, oh, I want to put the painting to step on.
Mm, yes, you did a piece called Painting to be Stepped On.
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
I stepped on your foot today without knowing. But, I mean, the point is, by then, I did all the, you know, I used up the canvas. So I said, oh, what am I going to do? I mean, it's not the kind of thing that I can go all the way to, you know, surplus shop and get another one. So I didn't know what to do. And then I realized that there was a little cut-up that was still there. So I said, okay, well, I'll use this cut-up. And the painting we stepped on is going to be this weird, weird shape. And it was.
You mentioned the smoke painting. That one, you set the canvas on fire?
Yeah. Well, set on fire sounds, wow, you know, I didn't do anything that exaggerated. It's a canvas, and then you just have, well, in those days, people smoked. I smoked too. And just put the lit cigarette there in a little, so, but the canvas is pretty heavy stuff, so it doesn't get burnt, you know. And also it was kind of wet too. And so you just put a little hole in there. And I was hoping that everybody's going to do that so that the whole canvas one day will be not there. That was the idea about that that work.
You had to recreate those for the show. Did any of them survive?
None of them survived. It's a very strange thing. And so the people who were not very happy about the fact that I was doing work, because, you know, in those days it was to do with women doing a show, you know, and also not just the women, but somebody from some from Asia, you know. So they immediately said, oh, that show was just calligraphy, which was not true at all. And I thought, okay, well, it's going to be all forgotten because, you know, the canvases walked out and there's no proof. You know what the proof was? George McCunis, without telling me, and which is so nice of him, I think he thought that maybe if I knew about it, I would say, no, don't waste your films, something like that. But he photographed each of my paintings there. Not only photographed the paintings, but that's how it was presented, you know, the whole room and everything as well.
So you could recreate them for this show.
Yeah, so we created them.
You also created an artist book called Grapefruit, which consisted of a series of instructions.
Yes.
And you've continued doing things like that. You more recently, Acorn.
Yeah. But you see, the grapefruit is the one that started it all. So that, you know, well, you know, acorn is good too, I suppose. But grapefruit's the one. And now when you go to the museum or not, you see the grapefruit instructions all over the place.
When did you first perform your bag piece, which is included in the show? It consists of a large black bag, which two people get into, and then they're instructed to take their clothes off, put them back on while they're in the bag?
Well, I didn't tell them to take their clothes off. They could. And some people, well, quite often. I mean, this was right after the 60s or something, so some people did.
And people watching can imagine what's going on inside the bag.
That's another thing. I mean, sometimes you think, oh, maybe two people went in and they're wiggling, so something's going on, you know. But sometimes nothing was going on.
What's happening at the MoMA show? Do you expect people to get into the bag?
Yes, and they all did yesterday. I was amazed, you know. There were bags, and people loved getting into the bag because even when you're in a bag, you can see outside. And we can't see inside, but they can see outside. And I put a huge mirror there so they can see themselves. And many dancers went and did things. It's beautiful. It was beautiful, yeah.
In another work called Cut Piece, which you performed at Carnegie Hall in 1965, you sat on the stage and audience members were invited to come up and cut your clothes off. That must have been considered rather shocking at the time.
Well, you know, at the time, of course. But the thing is, I just didn't feel too bad about it. The minute I put the pair of scissors in front of me and said, do it, I just went into a certain meditation, and I was in a different world. But then, just recently, I said, I've been doing this so much, and because people like cut piece. I want to be changing the role, and I'm going to cut them. So I would like to have one person who would come, and I would cut. You know. I was so surprised when I took the pair of scissors, how dangerous and how scary it is.
Well, you were having your clothes cut. In fact, you say that you wore your best suit, and at that time, that was a major sacrifice.
Well, you know, because I really took being an artist seriously. And I thought, well, if I'm going to give people my work, then I have to give the best. And the best should be everything that I give is best, of what I have, you know.
That performance was filmed by Albert and David Maisels, and that's also being shown at the MoMA exhibit. And in it, you look kind of nervous. How did you feel while it was happening? Were you worried that somebody might stab you?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't scared about it. And the thing is, when you see that film in museum or not, you will see my face going through different kind of expressions. And because I'm an Asian, I don't know, because I'm Asian, or maybe just because I am, that it doesn't show too much, you know, going, I'm not going, but in my mind, I was going, oh, dear, is this going to, what they're going to do to me, you know?
This type of performance art has become a normal part of the art world, but at that time, it must have come as a big surprise to people, especially when you did it at Carnegie Hall.
I know, Carnegie Recital Hall. Carnegie Recital Hall is a smaller Carnegie Hall.
But still.
Yeah.
Did you get permission from them? Tell them what you were going to do?
No, I didn't say anything. But it didn't matter because it didn't create any kind of commotion.
Performance art doesn't result in a saleable item like a painting or a sculpture. How did the art world view your work and how were you supporting yourself?
I was a waitress in a restaurant called Paradox, which was already an organic restaurant. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine those days? You know, I was working there. And I was proud about that. I always thought that in those days that art is such a sacred thing that I shouldn't make money from it. And, you know, I should make money just by supporting myself, just by doing something else.
Could you have sold tickets?
What?
Could you have sold tickets?
No, not. Oh, that's another thing. I didn't think about that until I went to London and Indigo Gallery. I thought, before the opening, the night before the opening, I thought, I have to find a way of getting some money from it. How am I going to do that? Oh, I should charge an admission. And the first person, I said, okay, pay, was it 5 shillings or 6 shillings? And you can do it. Was John K. John Lennon.
So that's where you met?
Yes.
And then in that show, you had a piece called Apple.
Yes.
Which consisted of an apple on a plexiglass stand. He took a bite of it?
Well, you know, it was a fresh apple. And that was quite daring in those days because, you know, people liked object sculpture made out of marble or wood or something like that. And so putting an apple on a stand, a beautiful plastic stand, was a talk of the town. And John was saying, oh, my God, I could get this apple in a grocery, you know, for 10, well, I don't know, whatever the money, 10 shillings or something. And she's charging £200. But I just wanted people to know how important the piece is. So
later, the Beatles created a company called Apple Corps Limited and then Apple Records. Was that just a coincidence?
I don't know. I think it's good that they did.
Now, the piece Apple is in the entrance to this show. Do you think anybody's going to grab that apple and eat it?
You know, whenever I do a show and when I put the apple there, somebody does it. Challenge and do it. It's amazing. When John did that, you know, when John just grabbed the apple and took a bite off it, I was so furious. I said, how dare he did that to an artwork? And I was looking very angry, I'm sure. And so he noticed it and he just went, and just put it back on the plastic stand.
How did that marriage affect the type of art you were doing? You began making music with the Plastic Ono Band. And there is a music listening room in the show where people can listen to the recordings. But were you still doing visual art?
I was doing both, always.
Do you see your music in relation to your other artwork? Do you see them as complementing each other?
Well, I'm not a critic, so I never thought, you know, I never analyzed what I'm doing. I was just familiar with creating music and familiar with creating art, that's all.
There are several films in the show, like film number 4, which consists of a series of buttocks. What was the idea behind, forgive the pun, behind that film?
I was an artist thinking like art. In other words, I thought there's going to be 4 sections, you know, when the butt is moving like this, you know, there's going to be 4 sections. And each section has a different movement. So I thought it's very interesting.
And a lot of the films have movement. There's a short film called Eye Blink, which shows an eye blinking in very slow motion. There's another one called Smile, which shows John's face going from serious to a smile and then back again. But perhaps the most provocative film in the show is Fly. We heard some music from it before. Do you want to talk about that?
Why? Well... I just never thought that Why is going to be the most controversial music, and it became in a way. So you see all that in Museum of Modern Art.
It's a fly walking over a woman's nude body, including her private parts.
Yes. And, well, I mean, of course, the private part is, you know, part of the body, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to avoid it? So
in Hollywood, they would.
Maybe. Well, I don't know about it now, but so yeah, in those days, of course. And it's very interesting that you see that fly film. And also, there's a little room that's called Plastic Ono Band. And you go in there and you hear all the sounds that was made in those days, yeah.
The show isn't a full retrospective. It only covers the years 1960 to 1971.
Yes.
You've continued to make art. Are we going to see another show?
Well, I'm doing many shows, really. But for this particular year, they told me that, you know, they're going to do a very serious show in Museum Modern Art, and they would appreciate that I don't do any other show before that. So it's going to be maybe around the end of this year, there'll be something. And then many shows will be in 2016, yeah.
There is one major new piece in the show called To See the Sky.
Yes.
That consists of a spiral staircase that leads up to a skylight. Can people walk up?
And they do. I haven't really walked up to the top yet because I'm too scared.
But you often talk about looking at the sky.
Yes. And the thing was, I always had a sky piece. A sky ladder, I call it a sky ladder, and one was very, very low, and then I did a little sort of a bit higher one, and then a bit ladder, a huge ladder, tall ladder. And but each time you know that when you're on the top of it, you're still very far from the sky, and that's the kind of thing that I wanted people to feel, you know, in life. You're not really close to the sky. You just love it. That's all.
Yeah. Although that spiral staircase is kind of shaky. Maybe that's why you're afraid to go to the top.
Oh, definitely. But also, this was the highest sky ladder I made.
Now, we're going to go out with one of your more recent songs called Bad Dancer. But a reminder.
Are you going to do that? Okay.
Is that all right?
Yes, yes.
Am I going to get in trouble with the FCC?
No, I don't think so. Well, I don't know. Don't talk about it too loud.
Meanwhile, you can see Yoko Ono, One Woman Show, 1960 to 1971 at the Museum of Modern Art. It'll be running until September 7th. Will it be traveling after that?
I have no idea. I just want this show to be perfect.
And I thank you so much for coming on our show.
It was
You've
so nice
perfect.
To talk to you, Leonard, again, yet again. You're a bad dancer. Never, never. Face your back. Watch your step.